Stuart Mandel with us here on the Bill and O.C. Show in Salt Lake City on ESPN 700. Did you have kind of an emptiness, kind of an empty feeling on Tuesday morning, Stuart, that the college football season was over and we are all now just looking towards spring football?
Yeah, you know, it felt a little bit like leaving Vegas after a long weekend or a party or something like that. I don't know. I was on a flight back from Dallas to San Francisco last night. I lived in San Francisco, and a lot of Oregon fans on that flight. It was a very quiet flight, to say the least. But it was a really fun season. It was also a really long season because of the playoffs. So I can't say that I'm disappointed that there's not more games next weekend.
Yeah, probably like that trip home from Vegas minus the tinge of regret that sometimes you have that you left, spent way too much money or made some bad decisions, right?
Yeah, you know, I lost a winter coat somewhere in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and completely sober, I might add. So other than that, there were no regrets. It was just, it was a real rush, honestly, to cover, first of all, for me personally, my first season with Fox, but also, you know, this new system that we'd all waited so long for that I had spent a lot of time chronicling, and it happened, and to be honest, it exceeded even my own expectations, and it was a lot of fun, and then, you know, like you said, then it was over, and we wait till next year.
Well, what do you think, as you take a step back from Monday night's game and take a look at it, kind of that 10,000-foot view from above, what was the biggest difference between Ohio State and Oregon? Is it as simple as boiling it down to Urban Meyer and having been there in the preparation over Mark Helfrich? What do you think separated those two teams Monday night?
Well, I definitely think that was a factor. That was one reason I leaned toward Ohio State playing into the game, even though it was kind of a toss-up in my mind. Urban Meyer having had that experience and how that would help to prepare. But at the end of the day, Ohio State is a more talented team. Now, Florida State is probably a more talented team than Oregon, too, and Oregon handled that. The difference here is Ohio State was really peaking, obviously, at the end of the season. And I just think the difference in that game was Ohio State's defense, which, you know, it was interesting to watch them this year. You know, 8-9 games into the season, nobody was talking about them as one of the best defenses in the country. But over their last three games, they played the three Heisman finalists all in a row, shut down Melvin Gordon, pretty much shut down Amari Cooper, and it wasn't that they shut down Marcus Mariota, it was that they shut down Oregon's running game completely. I would love to know the last time Oregon played a football game that did not have a run of longer than 11 yards. By doing that and making Oregon very one-dimensional, it just, you know, eventually that up-tempo offense can only do so much, but you can't lose the ball.
Stuart Mandel's our guest, Fox Sports, longtime guy with Sports Illustrated, finishing his first full year with Fox Sports, and he and Bruce Feldman did an outstanding job covering all things college football this season. It's scary to think, and we got to experience the Urban magic here, even for a fleeting moment, those 2 years that he was here, and I got to do his coach's show. But you, when you're around a guy like that, people like to say lucky and things like that, but when you do it at Bowling Green, Utah, Florida, and now Ohio State, it's more than luck. I think pound for pound, coach for coach, he's the best coach in college football, and Nick Saban's right there with him, but to do it at all the different places he's done it and to turn Ohio State into what looks like a glorified SEC team in the Big Ten as quickly as he has, it's pretty impressive.
I agree. I think he passed Saban. Not that there's any great gap between them. You know, they're the two best. I'd love to see them continue to square off in maybe some future playoff games. But to me, what separates them, in my mind, is Saban, you know, his program is second to none. And he's won multiple national titles at three different schools, just like Urban Meyer. But he hasn't, in none of his championships runs, did he do anything quite like what Urban Meyer did this season, to lose two Heisman-caliber quarterbacks, and then yet somehow the team only got better in his last three games with Cardale Jones, their quarterback. Not many coaches could overcome that, could adjust. I think that's one of the things he's best at, adjusting to the personnel he has, whether it was winning a national title with Chris Leak as his quarterback, who didn't really fit the system that he would have preferred to run, so he just used Tim Tebow to kind of help fill that role, or whether it was getting to Ohio State 3 years ago when they were coming off six wins and they were in a bowl game and got, you know, kind of a not as talented as you used to Ohio State team going defeated. And then he built them up very quickly in recruiting. You could tell early on that this team had a lot of speed and a lot of talent. I just didn't a lot of us didn't realize they were going to be able to turn it on as quickly as they did.
Hey, Stuart, closer to home, Utah fans, it's been a little bit of a tumultuous offseason coming off what was a really good year and a nice big step year and kind of a catch-up year in the Pac-12, finishing 9-4. And what's been a year where there's been some off-season turmoil and obviously coordinators leaving and things like that, Kyle Whittingham making some hires, but they got good news today. Devontae Booker's decided to come back for his senior year, a guy that ran for 1,500 yards and was really the cornerstone of that Utah offense. How big a move in your mind is it, knowing they don't have the coordinators yet and they don't know who yet is their quarterback? How big is it to get a guy back like Devontae Booker?
It's huge. And, you know, you put it up perfectly. I mean, you look at the players that they will have coming back from this past season, from a 9-4 season, from a really good season where he made a move in the Pac-12, and there's a lot to like about him. I left him out of my early top 25, though, because of the uncertainty with the coaching staff, and starting with the head coach. That's a very, very unusual situation to be at this. It's not late stage, but it is now after the season, close to signing day, and there's just a whole lot of uncertainty about Utah's coaching situation. I'd like to know a little bit more about it before I try to gauge how they're going to do next season. But you know, that's a big bonus, or not even a bonus. It's just a big assurance for next year. You know, you got your workhorse running back, and really, you know, one of the main reasons why I think that team was so much more competitive in the Pac-12 this season, to know that Booker is coming back.
What's crazy is, I know you left him out. ESPN had him at the back end of their preseason top 25. But what's crazy is so much talent coming back. Let's assume Whittingham makes some good hires here. He's made good hires in the past. Your schedule gets a little less difficult because Stanford's off the schedule, but you bring Washington back on the schedule this year. But 7 home games, open with Michigan, 5 road games. So the schedule's 7-5 home versus roads all there. But the Pac-12 South, I know everybody talks SEC West, but I think there's a legitimate argument to be made top to bottom. The Pac-12 South might be the toughest division in college football, and Utah, even with as much as they've got coming back, still rate as maybe the 5th best team in that conference, at least on paper.
Absolutely right. Now, obviously, you know, the only reason I don't say they're the toughest division is because they're still Colorado, and there is no Colorado in the SEC West. Although Colorado, even, I think, will be a little bit better. But, you know, when I looked at all the teams, there wasn't an obvious, you know, there were, of all those teams in the South, there were none that I said, well, they're definitely going to take a step back. Obviously, UCLA has some uncertainty losing Brett Hundley. He was a huge part of their success these past 3 years. But overall, they bring back more talent. Arizona was a young team that won the division. Arizona State, I think, should be better next season. USC should be better next season. You're right. It's a really tough road for Utah and for everybody in that division. And, you know, I think it's a testament to that division, the respect for that division. You saw as the selection committee did those weekly rankings, they were always a little bit higher on those teams than the 18 coaches poll were, and they were definitely higher on Utah. Utah, you know, obviously dropped some games toward the end, and they never dropped them out of the rankings, as far as I remember, which is a nice sign of respect for them.
Big picture college football now. Who is your, for those that didn't see your column, and it's up at foxsports.com under college football, but who are your two or three teams to beat to begin next season?
Well, I think Ohio State will be the clear favorite. They, you know, not only are they coming off a national championship, but bringing back possibly 3-star quarterbacks. But I have my doubts, but, you know, there'll definitely be somebody really good at quarterback for them next year. Ezekiel Elliott will be back after that breakout, you know, postseason run. 4 offensive linemen, and so many of their defensive standouts, and that team is loaded. TCU also brings back quite a bit from a team that, you know, very easily could have played in the playoff itself. I think those 2 teams start out as obvious favorites. I'll be interested to see what Baylor does. They're bringing back their entire defense, and they're always going to be good on offense. In terms of maybe a team that didn't finish quite as high, I had Auburn pretty high up there. I think the SEC next year might not have, it might be a little different feel, where they'll still have their 7 or 8, maybe more ranked teams, but they might not have a team in the preseason top 4. You know, Alabama has 2 starters coming back on offense. I don't think it's automatic that they reload like they usually have, but I'm intrigued by Auburn because I have so much respect for Gus Malzahn on that offense, and then to bring in Will Muschamp as their new defensive coordinator, you know, they're too long about him as a head coach. He's a fantastic defensive coordinator, and I think he'll upgrade them in a hurry, and that could be a pretty dangerous combination with Von running the offense and Muschamp playing the defense.
What's the off-season storyline you're keeping an eye on?
The Ohio State quarterback storyline is definitely fascinating.
Okay.
You know, it'll probably start with, I guess there's a little possibility here that Cardale Jones could throw in the next 24 hours, but beyond that, you know, Braxton Miller, will he stay? Will he leave? If he leaves, he becomes the most sought-after quarterback free agent since Russell Wilson a few years ago. I think that'll definitely be an intriguing off-season storyline. And I guess, you know, the other most intriguing one involves their rival. It involves Jim Harbaugh, Super Bowl coach, taking over at, you know, one of the prestigious programs in the country, one that's fallen on hard times. And, yeah, speaking of that, don't they open their season at Utah this year?
They do, at Rice-Eccles Stadium, September the 3rd.
That could be the most, I haven't looked at the full schedule, but that could be one of the most intriguing games of the opening weekend.
No, I totally agree with you. I think this is going to be one of those games because of the Harbaugh factor and obviously because it's Michigan coming west. I think you're going to have a lot of interest in that game here at Rice-Eccles Stadium.
Yeah, for sure. I'd like to think I'd be there. I can't say that. I don't have transparency yet, but I think you'll have a lot of visitors to Salt Lake City, at least.
I think either you or Feldman would probably be. I would guess one of the two of you guys would be here, right?
Yeah. I think that's a fair guess, yes.
I think so, too. How far away do you think Michigan is from being really good? I mean, is it going to be 2 years, or can he turn it pretty quickly? Because Hoak always seemed to recruit well. What he didn't seem to do was develop well. Do you think there's talent in that Michigan program?
Yeah, not quite as much as the recruiting rankings would suggest. I think they can be pretty good on defense early on. The problem is quarterback. They just don't have one. Dane Morris was supposed to be that guy, and he just hasn't panned out. Gardner's graduating. But it's just, you know, unclear who that guy will be. But I think he can get them start the foundation next year, and I wouldn't be surprised if the year after next they're competing at a top-10 level. You know, that's how much respect I have for him as a coach. And it's not like he's taking over a program where it's hard to bring players in. I mean, just like Urban Meyer got the players and the caliber of troops he wanted, almost immediately. I expect that would happen starting next year with Harbaugh at Michigan.
Where will the Big 12 fall on a championship game? Are they going to look at expansion, or do you think they'll petition first to see if they can stay at 10 and get a championship game that way?
Yeah, I think that's already happening. They'll definitely petition the NCAA. The fact that ACC is part of that, too. The ACC wants to deregulate conference championship games and the requirement of how many divisions and teams you need to do it. They might just put their two best teams on record in the championship game. So they're going to put that through, and then they have to decide, do you want to do a championship game immediately? Do you want to do it this coming year? Do you want to wait and see how the playoffs treat them next year? Because as much criticism as they took, you know, because it really did seem like lack of a championship game was the deciding factor, you were one conference championship upset away, like Florida State. They lost to Georgia Tech from Baylor being in the playoff, and everybody saying what a genius those guys were for not putting their playoff team at risk the final weekend. So, you know, it'd almost be smarter than not to make a knee-jerk reaction and give it a couple years and see if this is really going to hurt them more than help them in the playoff era, because honestly, the system they have is not a bad one. Everybody plays each other around the schedule. You do know who the best teams are at the end. It still happened in the first year of the playoff. They had this bizarre head-to-head situation, and the team that beat them out, Ohio State, you know, wouldn't have done it without the chance to impress everybody in their conference championship game.
Great work this year. I'm glad you found a good spot at Fox Sports. Always enjoy having you on the show, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks, Stuart.
All right, thanks, Phil.
Take care. Stuart Mandel.